Welcome back to EcoTalk, your radio home for all things green. And of course, nothing greener than solar power. It's natural, it's abundant, it's not free, but it certainly is cost effective, especially if you look at the environmental costs and savings, and if you look at it for the long haul, which more and more Americans are finally starting to do. We have a great solar program here in San Francisco. Hopefully it's being picked up in other parts of the country. And the guests I have this segment were very instrumental in that Vote Solar initiative. It was founded after San Francisco voters approved a $100 million bond initiative that paid for solar panels, energy efficiency, and wind turbines for public facilities. The measure paid for itself entirely from energy savings at no cost to taxpayers. It has two basic program areas to help cities build large-scale and cost-effective solar projects like the one on the Moscone Convention Center, I believe, and also to help states build robust solar markets, because they certainly are very influential and can make more than a dent in terms of really getting committed to it, and that's where it really has to go. So I'm pleased to introduce Adam Browning, Executive Director of the Vote Solar Initiative. And after 8 years with the EPA, we've been talking about that a lot this hour, Adam campaigned for the solar bond issue here in San Francisco, co-founded that very successful Vote Solar Initiative, and also J.P. Ross joining us. He's Policy Director for that initiative. He served as policy analyst with Greenpeace's Clean Energy Now team for 2 years, including work on the San Francisco Solar Bond, as well as running the San Diego Go Solar campaign. Sun certainly is very plentiful in San Diego. I went to college there for a couple of years. But it can work even in a city like San Francisco, which at least is, you know, part of the year pretty foggy. So if you could do it here, I think probably you've shown that it can be done anywhere. Is that the case? But were there people who were skeptical because of our climate?
Yeah, I think you're referring to our initial campaign that got our start, which was to put solar panels on the city buildings, the publicly owned buildings in San Francisco. And yes, when we ran that campaign a couple of years ago, many people were very skeptical that it could work in foggy San Francisco. But it's important to note that solar energy right now is a worldwide market. It's about a $10 billion market worldwide. The leaders are Japan and Germany, two different countries that have only a small portion of electricity that of sunlight that San Francisco has. So if Germany can do it, San Francisco definitely can.
And Germany, of course, is forward-thinking in many environmental areas like producer take-back policies. But I didn't know that they were so big in solar. Is that because of their consciousness, or is there some reason besides the physical reality that makes them leaders?
Well, I would say two reasons. One is they don't have a lot of natural resources, and they need to look to renewable resources. Mm-hmm. This is something that we here in the United States are increasingly coming to terms with. Mm-hmm. The question is not, should we transition to renewable energy? The question is, when? Mm-hmm. Fossil fuels are a finite resource. We need to do this sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm. And the German market really shows that bringing solar energy to the marketplace and to people is not so much a technical issue as a policy issue and a political issue. And the German government has decided from their country's perspective that it is time to make solar energy cost-effective for people to invest in. And the result of that has been that last year in Germany, over 700 megawatts of solar systems were installed, which is seven times what we have in California cumulative. So in 1 year, they installed seven times more than we have in California. The technology is there. It's the political decision to bring it out and to put it on people's rooftops and to start producing green electricity into the grid.
So if the solar power is here, abundant in the United States, are we starting to have the political willpower to really make it part of the mainstream and not just this thing on the fringes of society, the greenies who are signing up?
We sure hope so. California it has been a leader of this. We were proud to say that recently in January, the California Public Utilities Commission passed the country's largest solar program, $3.2 billion over 11 years to incentivize, it's a declining rebate schedule, to incentivize solar on the equivalent of 1 million rooftops here in California. Now that is no small potatoes. So the leadership very much is taking place on a state level, and where Vote Solar works is much of electricity is regulated on a state level. Our goal is to develop these robust solar markets on a state-by-state basis where we think that key markets can develop.
And if solar power is indeed a viable alternative to fossil fuels, what are the limits, if any? I know expense has certainly been raised often as, you know, well, not everybody can go out and get photovoltaic cells put on their roof. Is the price, first of all, going to be coming down as more governments and institutions and city managers and individuals and companies really start buying this stuff?
Absolutely. The cost of solar has been coming down dramatically over the last three decades, and then just over the last few years. The cost of installing a solar system just in 1999 and 2000 was probably 30-40% what it is nowadays, simply because the cost of solar has been coming down and will continue to go down. Historically, the cost of solar drops by about 20% with every cumulative doubling in production. So every time the market doubles, so the cost of solar drops by 20%. The California Solar Initiative that Adam referred to in California actually has the explicit goal of bringing solar into the mainstream, effectively making solar a cost-effective technology without the need for public rebates within the next 10 years. So the rebates will continue to go down, driving costs down, so that by 2017, there will no longer need to be public subsidies to help create a solar market in California.
What are some other cities in the U.S. that are really standouts besides San Francisco that are making a lot of headway?
Well, in California, there's quite a lot of municipal leadership here in the city of San Francisco, across the bay in Oakland. Mayor Brown has been a strong supporter as well. In San Diego, they just signed a 5-megawatt deal that will go far towards meeting the facility's public needs. But it's more of a state thing. I think we can look across the country here. New Jersey is a state that has just shown tremendous leadership in developing a solar market. You don't think of New Jersey as being environmental leaders, but you're wrong.
And how does that happen? Is that the vision of one? It's got to be more than one individual. Why do some states really take? I mean, California, that's a lot of trends start here, certainly a lot of environmental leadership. But New Jersey, do you know the story there?
I know some of the story. I can't speak to it all, but I think that it is actually a combination of some very strong leadership at the Board of Public Utilities level, Gene Fox, who led it there. They've gotten strong support from the governors, and there was a good base of solar advocates, just people like you and me, that it kept the heat on and didn't let it drop off.
What is Securing America's Energy Independence Act?
This is a very critical piece of federal legislation. As we've talked about, the cost of solar is slightly higher than the cost of getting electricity from your utility provider, such as PG&E here in the San Francisco Bay Area. And we need to provide financial incentives to make it cost-effective, effective for homeowners and business owners to buy solar systems. And what the Securing America's Energy Independence Act does is it's federal legislation that will effectively chop off 30% of the cost of buying a solar system. And this works for all type of solar, solar on your rooftops to make electricity, solar on your rooftops to heat water, or even big concentrating solar facilities that are sited in the middle of the desert. So it's really an all-inclusive piece of federal legislation that would create a 10-year program to help bring down the cost of solar. And we really see this as critical to creating solar markets in all 50 states.
And what are the prospects for that ultimate success?
Well, at this point in time, there are two bills, sister bills, as it were, one in the House and one in the Senate, and the organizations that we're working with, one of which is the Solar Energy Industries Association, which is the National Solar Industries Association, is really working to pass this bill. It's right now, we need to focus on getting as many co-sponsors as possible. The more co-sponsors a bill has, the more likelihood that it will reach the president's desk. So we've really been focusing on the House Ways and Means Committee and the Senate Finance Committee, and actually there is an action alert on the Vote Solar website that will help people in any state talk to their particular legislator and show their support for co-sponsoring that bill.
We have 3 minutes left, and I want to ask you a couple of things. First of all, Arizona. I was flying into Phoenix about a year ago, hot summer day, and I was sitting next to someone who lives in one of the housing developments in the foothills around Phoenix, and when he heard what I did, he said, you know, they are banning solar power, solar cells in our development, in many developments. That's typical. It's not atypical because some neighbors consider those panels an eyesore. And here we are sitting there, you know, in the desert, soaking up the sun. One of our co-producers, Debbie Friedman's in-laws, live in Phoenix. And every time she goes, she calls me. She says, oh, my God, global warming is really bad here. You know, it's so hot. It's 110. It's 150. You think about all the rooftops that are just being wasted. And with this kind of mentality, if they think, you know, solar cells, which I think are a sign of beauty and beautiful, and I wish ours showed more, where it's on the south side of the house, which doesn't show in our neighborhood as much. Look at Katrina. That's the effects of global warming. That's ugly. How important it is to get over this mentality that too many Americans have, or at least people who run these developments?
I absolutely agree. Here in California, we do have a state law that prohibits the banning of solar systems on one's roofs for aesthetic considerations. I think you're absolutely right. We do, as Americans, need to embrace these features of our salvation as something that's beautiful. As
especially in the hot desert sun. I mean, how many sunny days do they have?
They have a lot of sunny days. And they're actually, I would say, they're the next big state to lead in solar energy. There's true leadership of the Arizona Corporation Commission, all Republicans on that commission, I might add.
And there's some legislation that's now headed for the governor's desk.
Well, that's a little slightly separate issue. That's a tax credit issue. We're talking about a regulatory commission that would just expand the amount of solar energy that the utilities would have to facilitate for all their customers.
But tax credit certainly is part of the incentives that make Americans go out and make that, you know, take that plunge to solar.
Absolutely. Yeah. What we're talking about here in terms of bringing solar to scale is a short-term financial incentives to close that cost gap. We don't anticipate having to do things like that for the next 10 years. It's all about economies of scale.
And in the last minute, I've heard there's a shortage of silicon, which comes from sand. So is it the actual silicon or the not enough factories sort of ramped up to be making these panels fast enough because there is such demand now?
It's at this point in time, there is a shortage of purified semiconductor-grade silicon, which is right now kind of the workhorse of the solar industry. But frankly, these are the types of market fluctuations that you expect to see in a rapidly growing industry. Last year was the first year that the solar industry actually used more silicon than the semiconductor industry. That's a good sign. That means the solar industry is growing by leaps and bounds, and the silicon semiconductor industry is responding. But those factories are $500 million factories. They take some time to ramp up. We fully expect to see more semiconductor-grade silicon on the market in the
time. And then there's nanosolar, but we don't have time to get into that. We'll talk about that another show. Thanks so much for joining us, Adam Browning and J.P. Ross, both working hard on solar initiatives that are truly making a difference. We'll be right back.